This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Ridgwick with New Day Dawning. Welcome to the programme and thank you for joining us on Radio South Tyneside, your caring community radio.
I'm getting ready for a new day dawning. I'm getting ready for a brand new morning. Packing my bags for a heavenly journey. I can't wait to be there. No, I can't wait to be there.
Our first song this morning is The Union of Different Kinds, sung by the Fisherman's Friends.
For all the small people and the tall people, for the dispossessed and the absurd, for all the brokenhearted and the recently departed, for the unwashed, the unheard.
Mother Nature don't draw straight lines, broken molds in a grand design. We look a mess, but we're doing fine. We got kind life from members of the union of different kinds.
For all the lonely faces in those empty spaces, for the unloved and the denied, for the little wheel turning bigger deal, for all dreams that bloom and those that die.
Great lyrics there, which remind me so much of our parable today about a rich man who cares nothing for a poor beggar who is dispossessed, lonely, unloved, denied, whose dreams have died, just like those lyrics in that song. No, he cares only for himself. Jesus made time for those with no voice. He cared very much for people living on the margins of society who were despised and ignored. And he gave them dignity. He made time for those on the outside, looking in. I'd like to paraphrase this parable this morning, instead of reading it out, in such a way that you see Jesus as a climate activist as well. Perhaps when you read Luke 16:19 onwards, you may read something more into it too. This is how I look at it. Look at the poor man who lies helpless at the rich man's gate. His life balances precariously on a knife edge between hopelessness and despair. Dogs lick his sores. He can't help his lot in life. He has no hope of a future. No one cares about him. His circumstances are dire through no fault of his own. He lost all he owned through drought. The rains had not fallen for the fifth year running, and water was now scarce, and there is no food to speak of. The animals he once owned died of starvation. He suffers like no other, and will face hardship to the end of his days. If and when plague or disease comes knocking at his door, he will die. He prays for rain, he hopes in God, and still no one is there to save him. Here's a song based upon Psalm 88 from my album Called to Serve, called Are You Listening, Lord?
Are you listening, Lord? Are you there? Are you listening, Lord? Are you there?
But I cry to you for help.
Listen, Lord, are you there?
My My soul is full of trouble, and my life's a living hell. And I've got no strength, I am dying. The darkness is my friend, and all my hope is gone. I've nowhere else to go. So I cry to you for help, oh Lord. Yes, I'm crying out to you, oh Lord. Day and night,
night and day, all I do is pray. Are you listening, Lord? Are you there?
I can sink no further now, I've reached an all-time low. The waves close over me, I am drowning. And I'm all on my own, and all my friends have gone. There's no one I can turn to. So I cry to you for help, oh Lord. Yes, I'm
the beggar who lies there at the gate means nothing to the rich man. He has no real insight into this poor man's pain, not one bit. He never speaks out in his behalf, never lifts a finger to help him. And yet he does know he's there because he's an eyesore, an inconvenience, and he seems to attract the dogs of the area to his gate. The poor man has very little idea of how the rich man lives. He knows little of luxury and fine living. Many of the pleasures the rich man enjoys come at great cost to the poor man. The fossil fuels he burns which foul the atmosphere, the forests he ravages for his own use, the rivers he carelessly pollutes, the climate change he brings about. The rich man enjoys life just as it is, with good food, expensive wines, and a variety of choice meats. He's very wasteful with food and buys far more than he needs. He carelessly discards his rubbish, dumping it near where the poor man lies, by his own gate. The rich man takes great pride in his expensive clothing and designer shoes. He has a few cars to choose from, but he much prefers to relax most of the day in his chair by the window, gazing out onto the street where the poor man lies dying. The rich man is not a very healthy man, but he consoles himself in that he has the benefit of free healthcare, good hospitals, and medicines. What will the poor man say or do if he were to realize that the selfish actions of this rich man have a direct link to his own predicament, and that his life of luxury has had a lot to do with the poverty he faces? Will he forgive the rich man? Will God forgive him? Here's the parable of the rich man from Pearls of Great Price.
A rich man dressed in purple, fine linen and in fur. He ate from sumptuous banquets, his meals au cordon bleu. He lived his life of luxury, this was his fate. Yet he ignored the poor man who lay dying at his gate. The dog showed far more mercy than the rich man ever did. They'd come and lick the wounds of this sad old invalid. He dreamed that scraps of food were falling from the rich man's plate. He woke then, died of hunger there by the rich man's gate. He was carried off by angels to be a daybreak. side. To Hades went the rich man, for that same night he died. And as he lay in torment, saw Abram far away, with Lazarus beside him, right there at heaven's gate. He called for a drop of water, he was burning up inside, but a chasm lay between them, the gap was far too wide. But Abram said, remember, your life brought such good things, now this poor man's found comfort, just hear him dance and sing. Then father begged the rich man, please warn my family. If Lazarus tells my brothers, they'll escape this agony. Oh no, said Father Abraham, the words they're to be read. If they won't heed the prophets, they won't trust the risen dead.
I wonder why the rich man was so hardened and so resistant to the needs of the poor man. Was it ignorance? He can't say that he didn't know he was there. He could see him through the window. Was it fear that he might catch something from him, some kind of disease? Was he anxious that if he gave to one, he might attract even more beggars? Did suspicion have a part to play? What if this man was not a genuine beggar? Did he judge him, believing him to be a lazy good-for-nothing? Perhaps in great pride he believed himself to be a better class of person. Or perhaps he was too busy and had more important things on his mind. He may even have asked himself, what can one person do? How can I possibly make a difference? Let's listen to local singer John Wrightson singing With a Little Bit More.
With a little bit more, we could have changed the world. With a little bit more, we could have fed them all. With a little bit more, we could have made it all worthwhile. With a little bit more, with a little bit more. With a little bit more, we could have saved more lives. With a little bit more, so many could survive. With a little bit more, we could have turned things upside down. With a little bit more, with a little bit more. Countries of the world, don't turn your heads away. You have to face reality, no time for more delay. You read it in the papers, we hear it on the news. Suffering and the anguish they go through. With a little bit more, we could have changed the world. With a little bit more, we could have fed them all. With a little bit more, we could have made it all worthwhile. With a little bit more, with a little bit more. With a little bit more, we could have saved more lives. With a little bit more, so many could survive. With a little bit more, we could have turned things upside down. With a little bit more, with a little bit more. On the plains of Africa, they drop in dead like flies, while politicians ponder over money they rely. Conference after conference, meetings and debate, until they make their minds up they must wait. With a little bit more, we could have changed the world. With a little bit more, we could have fed them all. With a little bit more, we could have made it all. With a little bit more, we could have turned things upside down.
When Jesus mingled with the poor and the outcast of his day, the poor, the leper, the tax collectors, he was criticized, for such people were thought to be unclean and unworthy. The religious people of the day taught the law, but avoided its deeper practices. They cared more about outward adornment and reputation. They were quick to enforce rules, making judgment against people. But they failed to see that the law also called for mercy, forgiveness, and fairness. The prophet Micah had written, "What does the law require of you? It is to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." Could Jesus possibly have been telling this parable to make it obvious to the religious leaders how blind they were? And do his words make it obvious to us in this day and age too, how blind we can be? Here's a lovely song written by a friend of mine, Margaret Scott, singing along with United Folk, a group I used to belong to. And the song is, "I Hear Your Voice."
I hear your voice crying in the darkness. I hear your voice calling out my name. I hear your voice telling me to wake up. I serve, now you do the same. I hear this voice urging me to action. I hear this voice calling out my name. I hear this voice drumming through my heartbeats. I gave, now you do the same.
There was a line in that song which said, "The sacrifice I want is love in action. That's when you'll be living my word." In 1 John chapter 3 verse 17, such words as this speak right to our hearts, where it says, "If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth." This theme reminds me of a question that was asked by a very sincere elderly Christian at a mission once, the kind of question that makes us all feel challenged. The panel, comprising one or two theologians and some lay folk, were asked, "When we come before Jesus at the judgment day, how will we ever reconcile ourselves to the fact that we lived like the man who in the Bible lived in relative luxury, while out there so many have nothing at all?" I wonder what this next hymn says to us about giving of ourselves in God's service. It's Take My Life and Let It Be, sung here by Leanne Albrecht. I really love this version of this hymn, but one or two verses were missing there. One of them begins, "Take my silver and my gold, not a mite would I withhold." But I suppose if we offer God our hearts and our will, surely we must be offering something of our wealth too. Did every follower of Jesus give all their possessions away? No, they didn't. There was one rich young ruler who was challenged in this way. He wanted to follow Jesus, and he was invited to sell all he had to follow him. This was expected of Jesus' inner core of disciples. But this young man went away disappointed because his great wealth meant more to him than anything else. But Jesus didn't command everyone to give away all their possessions. He was actually supported by people who provided meals for him and his disciples, who supported his ministry in other ways, who were able to offer him shelter, a donkey, even a tomb. A tax collector called Zacchaeus was not told to give all his money away either, but encouraged to put right the debt he owed to people through his dishonesty. Ultimately, today's reading gives out a clear warning for us not to be self-indulgent, wasteful, or greedy, and not to ignore the disadvantaged people of this world. We're invited to be generous in whatever way we can. This rich man's crime here was not that he did wrong things. After all, he hadn't set out to hurt the beggar, or remove him from his gate, or ill-treat him. His real crime was that he simply did nothing at all. What is it God wants of us? Perhaps he has a different purpose for each one of us. I'd like to finish with a meditation by Fiona Castle, wife of the former musician Roy Castle, which follows on nicely from our last hymn, Take My Life. And this is what she says. Begin at once, before you venture away from this quiet moment. Ask your King to take you wholly into his service, and place all the hours of this day quite simply at his disposal, and ask him to make and keep you ready to do just exactly as he appoints. Never mind about tomorrow. One day at a time is enough. Try it today and see if it is not a day of strange, almost curious peace, so sweet that you'll be only too thankful when tomorrow comes to ask him to take it also, till it will become a blessed habit to hold yourself simply and wholly at his command for any manner of service. The whatsoever is not necessarily active work. It may be waiting, whether half an hour or half a lifetime, learning, suffering, sitting still. But shall we be less ready for these, if any of them are his appointments for today? Let us ask him to prepare us for all that he is preparing for us, and then the world around us will be rich indeed. That's all we have time for, I'm afraid. We're going to finish with a song of mine called From This Moment On, which is like a prayer of commitment, which follows on nicely from that reading. Have a good week, everyone, and much love to anyone listening in from a hospital bed this morning. I hope you'll join us again next week at 8 o'clock in the morning. This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Ridgwick saying goodbye until then. Andrew?
Bye, everyone.
Bye for now.
From this moment on,